Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. Text number 30. Yavad avabhasahiti suragiram anuparikraman bhagavan adityo vasudatalam adinaiva pratapat Dhanena vachadhahiti tadahi bhagavat upasano pachitati purusha prabhavastad anabindanam samaja vena ratthena jyoti mayena rajanim apidhinam karishyamiti saptakrit vastaranim anupariyakramar dvitiya eva patangaha. Translation, while so excellent the universe, King Priyavrata once became dissatisfied with the circumambulation of the most powerful sun god. Encircling Sumeru Hill on his chariot, the sun god illuminates all the surrounding planetary systems. However, when the sun is in the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, and when the sun is on the south, the north receives less. King Priyavrata disliked this situation, and therefore he decided to make daylight in the part of the universe where there was night. He followed the orbit of the sun god on a brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. He could perform such wonderful activities because of the power he had achieved by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There is a Bengali saying that someone is so powerful that he can make the day night and the night day. That saying is current because of the prowess of Priyavrata. His activities demonstrate how powerful he became by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic powers. In Bhagavad Gita 18:78, it is said, wherever there is the master of all mystic powers, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, victory, fortune, and all other opulences are present. Devotional service is so powerful. When he achieves what he wants to accomplish, it is not by his own mystic power, but by the grace of the master of mystic power, Lord Krishna. By his grace, a devotee can accomplish wonderful things, unimaginable even to the most powerful scientist. From the description in this verse, it appears that the sun moves. According to modern astronomers, the sun is fixed in one place, surrounded by the solar system. But here we find that the sun is not stationary. It is rotating in a prescribed orbit. This fact is corroborated by Brahma Samhita 5.52. Yasyagyaya brahmati sambhrita kalachakraha. The sun is rotating in its fixed orbit in accordance with the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Jyoti Veda, the science of astronomy in the Vedic literature, the sun moves for 6 months on the northern side of Sumeru Hill and for 6 months on the southern side. We have practical experience on this planet that when there is summer in the north, there is winter in the south, and vice versa. Modern materialistic scientists present themselves as knowing all the ingredients of the sun, yet they are unable to offer a second sun like Maharaj Priyavrata's. Although Maharaj Priyavrata devised a very powerful chariot, as brilliant as the sun, he had no desire to compete with the sun god. For a Vaishnava never wants to supersede another Vaishnava. His purpose was to give abundant benefits in material existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that in the months of April and May, the rays of Maharaj Priyavrata's brilliant sun were as pleasing as the rays of the moon. And in October and November, both morning and evening, that sun provided more warmth than the sunshine. In short, Maharaj Priyavrata was extremely powerful, and his actions extended his power in all directions. Om Agyanantimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dharati Swaparantikam Nama Sreshta Manumapi Sachi Putra Matra Sarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Rupuri Maturingo Stavritim Radha Kunda Girivara Maho Radhika Marava Sam Praptoya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi. Translation once again. While so excellently ruling the universe, King Priyavrata once became dissatisfied with the circumambulation of the most powerful sun god. Encircling Sumeru Hill on his chariot, the sun god illuminates all his systems. However, when the sun is in the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, and when the sun is on the south, the north receives less. King Priyavrata disliked this situation and therefore decided to make daylight into the part in that part of the universe where there was night. He followed the orbit of the sun god on a brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. He could perform such wonderful activities because of the power he had achieved by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this introduction to the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about the organizational authority of the universe, organizational structure of the universe. And in a very engaging dilemma or tension that is created by between the different lines of authority, between this here, we have Narada Muni as the instructing spiritual master of Priyavrata Maharaj, who's given an instruction for renunciation and to become free from entanglement in the material world. And on the other hand, the request of Swayambhuva Manu to take responsibility for leadership, for management, for administration of the universe. And at that stage, in the early stages of the dilemma, of the tension, we see that Narada Muni was, you can say, more influential. And Priyavrata was sticking to his guns, sticking to his resolve for renunciation, in his determination, in his vrata, to remain detached, unentangled in the material world. And therefore, Swayambhuva Manu was in a great dilemma because he required assistance from his son, his qualified son, his expert son, Priyavrata, in the management of the universe. And it's explained in this chapter, the Bhagavatam, that it wasn't just for the management of this planet, for managing the planet Earth, but it was for management of the universe, universal management, cosmic management. So it was a very, very high post he was seeking for. Yesterday we heard that Priyavrata Maharaj, he was ruling for 100 million years times seven. Was it times seven? 100 million. One consists of 100 million years. And he ruled the universe for 11 such arubdas. 11 times 100 million years. So he was in post for a long time. Our Obama, he can stay in post for a maximum of 2 terms, isn't it? What, 8 years or something? Very unusual for a president or a prime minister to remain in post for 2 or 3 terms at the most. That's historical in many countries. For 12 years, earthly years. What to speak of 11 times 100 million celestial years. He was required a very, very amazing amount of expertise, and for us, inconceivable, achintya. How could somebody rule? How could somebody live? Because we have this conditioned nature of understanding history in terms of a linear progression. We've just had our New Year's celebration. We think that this is a new year. Another new year has started according to the Christian calendar. A new year. And this is determined according to the, I guess, according to the birth of Jesus Christ. Maybe a couple of thousand years. But when we look at the cycle of history in the Srimad Bhagavatam of 430, Prabhupada mentioned it yesterday in a purport, I think. A cycle of yugas as 4,300,000 years in one cycle. And then so many millions of those cycles. In one day of Brahma, in a half of a day of Brahma, 4,300,000 times 100. Half is 12 hours of Lord Brahma. So our time, our concept of time is very much limited in terms of our relativistic perception of this material world. The Srimad Bhagavatam is opening up a whole different universe, a vast universe of experience, a vast universe of management, of organization, of organizational structure that we can barely conceive of. In our limited pea brain Kali Yuga, from our perspective here in Kali Yuga. However, there's a lesson to learn, and the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam is presenting this cosmic manifestation. It's presenting a structured organization that is not just a haphazard, whimsical manifestation of the universe. But there is a great scientific brain behind this universe. There's an ultimate cause behind the universe. And that ultimate cause has a reason. The universe is created for a reason. It's not just a big bang for nothing. It's more than a big bang for nothing, but the universe is created according to cycle, according to the order or the ordain of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through his empowered representatives. And here, today, we're talking about empowerment. Srila Prabhupada, he says, in short, Priyavrata Maharaj was empowered to perform this activity, to perform the activity of the administration of the universe. And in the meantime, in the context of this empowerment, we're looking at a greater context, or the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is Lord Brahma. Because Lord Brahma comes into the scene as the ultimate authority in the universe. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavye Muhyanti Yatsudayaha. Lord Brahma is the ultimate of the demigods. He's the ultimate secondary creator of the universe. Lord Brahma is empowered in the heart. This is empowerment comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the heart of the devotee. He can perform very wonderful activities. Prabhupada says here, unbelievable activities, actions that extend beyond the power that the modern material scientists, they can barely, unimaginable even to the most powerful scientists. that we can achieve by this level of empowerment. So Lord Brahma, as the original creator of the universe, he is called upon by Svayambhuva Manu in order to correct the situation, to take the ultimate authority. The ultimate authority is the original person and the original creator. He's the ultimate authority here because he knows what the creation is for. He knows what the creation requires. He's cognizant, he's fully aware of what is required for the creation to sustain and to maintain and to produce the results that it was intended for, its original intention. And that is to provide the conditioned, the wayward living entities an opportunity to engage in devotional service so that we can realign or reconnect with our original dormant Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose or the function of the universe. And Lord Brahma knows well that that requires organization, requires system, it requires strategy. And we're going to talk a little bit about technique. But I just wanted to introduce the class today in terms of the bigger picture of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the authority, these lines of authority coming from Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma was instructing Priyavrata to take the responsibility for the administration of the universe because it was Krishna's desire. It was Krishna's desire that Priyavrata Maharaj take responsibility to maintain and administer the universal affairs. Lord Brahma was empowered by Krishna, and Brahma comes to establish dharma, as we heard yesterday, real dharma. And that will be coming through the kshatriyas. When Krishna establishes the parampara system, he establishes through the brahmanas, the kshatriyas take responsibility. Evam parampara pratam imam rajasayo vidhu. The kshatriyas take responsibility because they have power. The kshatriyas can enforce their power, enforce their influence, and they can maintain the brahminical culture through their tejas, through their expertise, daksha, through their Ishvara Bhav, through their controlling potency. When it's dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, they can maintain the parampara. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, a devotee, I think it was Sahotra Maharaj, he asked Srila Prabhupada, what is the technology in the Vedic times? What was the technology? What was the computer chips? What were they doing? How were they building these palatial buildings? Lord Ramchandra lived in a 12-story building in Ayodhya. How did they build such a high building without cranes and without computers and without AutoCAD and all different types of software programs and engineers and all sorts of knowledge, IIT degrees? How can you build a building without an IIT degree? They were thinking like this, the devotees, that you need degrees and diplomas and certification. And we need all types of tech. So what was the technology in the Vedic times? Microsoft. Was it Apple or Microsoft? What, Intel? What was the technology? And Prabhupada said the technology in Vedic times was parampara. And then the devotees think Prabhupada didn't hear properly. I don't think he understood the question. Prabhupada, we asked, what is their technology? Did they have cranes? Did they have bulldozers? And Prabhupada said, yeah, technology in Vedic time was parampara. And so Prabhupada said, what is technology? Technology means it's the practical application of science, technology. So we have a problem for cold. Here it's too cold. We have a problem. So what do we do? Different technologies to become warm, to overcome the problem of freezing cold. So we contain fire in one place and we have a fireplace. That was original technology, was to create a fireplace. And here you'll see all different types of open fireplaces in shops and outside of shops, burning paper and plastic and foam and rubber to become hot. That's a technology, to become to heat, fire. And then we become more sophisticated in our scientific understanding of controlling matter and manipulating matter, and we create a bar heater, a radiator, or that we create a blow heater, or we create some form of internal heating systems, whatever it is, ducted heating. So that's a technology for heating, for overcoming the problem of cold, being cold, and vice versa. We're too cold, so too hot, so we develop a system for cooling. All sorts of different types of systems. Originally, the original cooling system was a fan, a hand fan, a peacock fan, or some type of a hand fan. Simple technology. And then it becomes more and more complex as we become more scientifically, say, at manipulating the material energy. And we develop AC, and then we develop all sorts of cooling systems. And we overcome the problem of heat. So that's technology. Problem of transportation. So we develop horse and buggy or a bullock cart, and we have a horse cart. This is a form of overcoming the problem of transportation to get from one place to another, A to B. Jaya Shishi, Gonitai, Shishi, Krishnam, Shishi, Darshan. And the problem of communication, and we develop all sorts of communication, telecommunication, fax communication, and then we developed internet communication, we developed Facebook communication, we developed all sorts of communication. That's solving the problem of communication. In this way, technology is a problem-solving science. It's a practical application of science to solve a problem. And Prabhupada said, but the real problem isn't heat and cold or transportation and communication. The real problem is birth, death, disease, and old age. These are the real problems that we all face. And they're the problems that we face eternally, from the time of Lord Ramchandra in Ayodhya to the 2014. The same problems were faced. And the real scientist to overcome those problems is Parampara. They're the ultimate scientists. They have a scientific process that will enable us, empower us to overcome the problem, the real problems that we face, and not the temporary relative problems that we face according to space, according to our location, according to our geographical location, but according to our eternal needs. The Parampara have the solution, scientific solution. And the technique is given to us in terms of bhakti yoga. That is a technique of this scientific application. The technology is shravanam kirtanam. To hear and to chant. That's a technology that can all of our problems. All problems are solved by that. At the beginning of the pastime of Sudama Vipra in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it said that those who viramata visheshagno, it says those who understand the essence of life, who understand that the human form of life is to overcome birth, death, disease, and old age, to connect with this technology. Those who understand this, viramata visheshagyo vishunakama maganaya, and who are completely finished with the path of sense gratification, who are disgusted with material sense gratification, who understand the essence of life and who are disgusted with the path of sense gratification, they will relish the uttama sloka kata. They will relish to hear the pastimes and transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they understand that this connection is helping them to overcome the problem, eternal problem of disease and old age. That's the real problem that we face. Not being cold, not being hot, not being inconvenienced in the material world, but how to overcome this problem. So Prabhupada gives here a challenge to the scientists in the middle. In his first paragraph, he's talking about empowerment, and he continues to develop the theme of empowerment in the third paragraph. But in the sandwich, in the middle of this presentation, in his purport, in his commentary on this very illuminating subject matter from Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada can't resist having a dig at the scientists. That the scientists, they have such a high esteem in this current day and age. The scientists and psychologists and the different, they've taken authority. They've taken the authority of the tradition of the brahmanas. They've taken the authority of the religious organizations, even the priests and the rabbis. They've taken the authority through their scientific research and their influence and propaganda and media, whatever it is. They've become very, very influential. And so we're the solutions. And that religion causes war, religion causes poverty, religion is hypocrisy. Religion is the cause of all problems, and science will solve all problems. That's the propaganda that we have to deal with. And we have to show by example, we have to show by conviction, we have to show by realization that that's a fallacy. This is incorrect. That it's not true, that science has all the solutions. Science has solutions, but science without religion is a dangerous proposition. Scientific ingenuity and scientific realization, rationalization, without culture, without religion, without God, is dangerous. And that's been seen, and probably many examples of scientific advancement that has caused havoc in human society, like the atom bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Prabhupada referred to that, and of course all of the natural or the side effects of scientific development and technological development, how we are destroying the planet. So this is because of the unlimited or insatiable greed of the living entity, the conditioned soul, to expand and to exploit the material energy. So Srila Prabhupada's challenging the scientists. He's saying, you say that you understand all of the ingredients of the sun, that the sun has all of these elements. You have understood all the elements of the sun, then create a second sun. If you know what the ingredients are, if you know everything about the sun, through your scientific understanding, then create a second sun, like Maharaj Priyavrata. Maharaj Priyavrata wasn't an IIT graduate, but Maharaj Priyavrata, he was able to create a sun, and a sun that had very special potency, a sun that could cool and heat. Like, I'm not sure if you have those systems here, but in the West we have these heat pumps, and a heat pump can cool and it can heat at the same time. According, you just press heat and it will go up to heating, and you press cool and it will cool the house down. So Maharaj Priyavrata was the original inventor of this heat pump. He invented this pump that could cool the earth when it was too hot in summertime, and it could warm the earth in December, in January, when it was too cold. In the morning, in the evening time would be nice and warm. We should pray for King Priyavrata to bless us today with some sun rays here in the Dham. But this is Prabhupada's challenge to the scientists, that King Priyavrata, because of his empowerment, something extraordinary, beyond the imagination of the scientists. Scientists can't even imagine doing this. They can't create a little mosquito, or to speak of a sun. They can't create anything in terms of life. Prabhupada's challenge in life comes from life conversations with Bhaktisukta Damodaramaraj, is with the lemon seed. Inside the lemon seed is a potency, the vitamin C, that the whole technology of a lemon tree is inside a little seed. And his challenge is that for those scientists to create a lemon tree, create a lemon in your lab, in your laboratory, just create one lemon and I'll be satisfied. If you can create one lemon, I'll be satisfied. So Prabhupada couldn't resist this little challenge today. But what we want to do is really to make a short presentation to dissect the anatomy here today of empowerment. What is empowerment? How does empowerment come about? What are the characteristics of empowerment that we can look for and hope for and to seek out as practitioners of Krishna consciousness? Because our lives in devotional service are an application of philosophy, Prabhupada said. Philosophy without kotas is dry, it's empty, it's an empty shell, an empty husk. It's mental speculation. And the devotees actually are practical walking, Prabhupada says, that we imbibe the philosophy of Krishna consciousness through our actions. Raghunath Das Goswami once said that our love for Krishna is our external activities. What we do with our daily life is an external manifestation of our internal meditation. So what we meditate, dhyayato vishaya pungsam, sangat sanjayate kama, what we meditate upon, what we associate with, who we associate with, what thoughts, what people, what ideas, what concepts we associate with, then that will determine our actions. And our actions, because And it's those habits that determine our character, and our character which determines our destination. So we need to align ourselves with this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's the Srimad Bhagavatam that is rewiring the hard drive. It's giving us a different perspective on reality, a real perspective. It's penetrating through the dark layers, the dense layers of ignorance, of our attachment to the material body, of our false conception of who we are, and revealing to us reality. Srimad Bhagavatam is the real world. And we are expert, and we are conditioned by a temporary world, a world of illusion. Nashto moha smriti labdha tvat parashadat maya chuta. In the end of the Gita, Arjuna says, yes, now my illusion has gone. Nashto moha smriti labdha. Now I got my memory back. I remember who I am. I'm a spirit soul. Jivare surupohe nityare Krishna das. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. But I forgot that due to material energy for so many millions and millions of births. I forgot that I was a servant of God, that I was a servant of Krishna, that I was eternally blissful and full of knowledge. I forgot that due to conditioned nature. But by your mercy, tvat prasadat, by Krishna's mercy, achuta, I remember who I am. And this is the nature of the devotee. When a devotee becomes empowered, we're jumping to the characteristics. When a devotee becomes empowered by Krishna, by the spiritual master, by the process of bhakti yoga, the devotee always offers the credit to the authority, to a superior authority, to Krishna, to the parampara, to the technique, to the technology, not to themselves. We don't take the credit that it's because of my skill, my penetrating, and my intellect, my expertise, my charisma, not because of those things. It's because of empowerment. It's because, and with that empowerment comes a correct understanding on how to apply, how to use one's talent, one's skill, one's ability in Krishna consciousness. Not to exploit, not to manipulate, not to take something from the process of bhakti that will become an obstacle or a blockage in development of our Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness of those around us. Here Prabhupada quotes the verse, the last verse of the Gita, that where there is Krishna, Yogeshvaraha, Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna, wherever there is the master of all mystic power, there at that place, and where there is Arjuna, Danudara, Partho Danujataraha, where there is Danudara and where there is Yogeshvara, there you will find extreme, there'll be wealth, Sri, Tatra, that place, there'll be Sri Vijayo, there'll be victory, there'll be wealth and victory, and extraordinary power, Bhuti, unlimited power. Krishna is the source of all power, there'll be unlimited power. And there, Dhruva Niti, there will be morality. There will be good, upstanding, righteous dharma. Citizens who follow the law of the land and the law of the Lord, Krishna's law, Dhammam tu Sakshat, Bhagavat Paranitam, the law of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says, by following the Srimad Bhagavatam, then naturally you will develop all good qualities by practicing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this empowerment is a very integral part of our consciousness, of our Krishna consciousness, of our ongoing development of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is what we call process. And actually both of those words are very important. It's revelatory, it's a revelation, and it's a process. It's an end and it's a means and an end, but the process is very, very important, what we do to become empowered and to assist others to become empowered through the empowerment process. But that revelation comes from pleasing Krishna, from pleasing spiritual master, from pleasing authorities. Maharaj Priyavrata had the whole line, Narada Muni, Swayambhuva Manu, Lord Brahma, and Krishna, right? Complete empowerment coming through that line of authority, or the parallel lines of authority, you can say. This is a common catchphrase in ISKCON at the moment, parallel lines of authority. And there we have a very good, a vivid example of parallel lines of authority here in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. Narada Muni and Lord Brahma, the two authorities who are empowering, double empowerment for Priyavrata to perform extraordinary activities, unimaginable to the scientists, unimaginable to us, what he could achieve. And devotees can achieve the same level by with the parampara, by connecting and pleasing Yasya Prasadat, the spiritual master, by pleasing our authorities, we can achieve the same level of empowerment. And it's not just something from the scripture. Let's take a look at some empowerment from scripture. But I also want to look at empowerment in terms of our friends here, our brothers and our sisters, our empowered devotees, contemporary examples of empowerment from the smallest devotee to the biggest devotee, from the ABC to the GBC in the movement, empowerment. We can see empowerment everywhere in Krishna consciousness as a practical revelation or manifestation of Krishna's mercy through this Krishna consciousness movement. But first of all, scripture. And one of the most, for me, one of the most vivid examples of this level of empowerment, and that's very relevant to this connection with Priyavrata Maharaj and his empowerment through his spiritual master and Lord Brahma, is the story of Sudama Vipra. And Sudama Vipra, he was blessed by Krishna. He was blessed by Sandipani Muni. He and Krishna were both blessed. And the pastime is very illustrative. The pastime is very a wonderful meditation. It's very, very, it enables us to connect deeply with this concept, this understanding, conceptual understanding of empowerment. And the description in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto on Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, they provide a very tangible context for us to grasp the concept, this idea, that here we have a student in an ashram, but Krishna, he's a real person. Krishna was a boy, Balalila. Krishna was a student. Krishna was, he was a lover. Krishna was a son. Krishna was a father. Krishna had unlimited capacity to manifest his rasa with the living entities, with his devotees. Akila Rasamrita. He's an ocean, a sindhu of rasa. Krishna can exchange unlimitedly with devotees. So he would exchange with his teacher. He performed this pastime of being a student. And as a student, Vasandanto Gurohitam, he lived in the ashram of Sandipani Muni for the pleasure of Sandipani Muni. To control, he went there to illustrate how one should live as a student. And he was given the task of collecting firewood for the yajna, because this was the activity of the students in the ashram, to collect firewood, to bring the firewood to the spiritual master, and to provide the paraphernalia for the yajna and for the daily services. And as we know, there was an unseasonal storm that erupted, and all of a sudden in Ujjain, and it was torrential downpour, not just a little thunder and lightning, but flooding, extensive flooding, like just water inundated the whole land. And Sudama, Krishna's friend, and Krishna are collecting the firewood, and it's described in the Bhagavatam that they held on to the firewood. They held on to each other's hand all night. They were out stranded in the forest, in the jungle, submerged in water, water all around them. And wind and hail and rain and floods, and they were just determined that they went out to the forest on the order of the spiritual master. They're completely free from their bodily concept of life. That's what really touched Sandipani Muni's heart, that everybody's attached to their body. He said to them, when he greeted them, he says, "Tushto hambo dvijasrishta, you are the greatest of all the brahmanas that I've ever taught. You two brahmanas," or Krishna doesn't have a caste, but it says, "You're the greatest of all brahmanas, because you two, and let Satya Santo Manorata, he's giving a blessing to them because he could see that they endured such intense hardship only for their spiritual master, to please their guru. Experienced intense hardship. They survived this torrential downpour and floods and storms and inconvenience for their personal self for a higher purpose, tapasya. They engage in this tapasya. And so there's always reciprocation. Krishna consciousness is always two ways with Krishna. In fact, in the competition, Prabhupada says in the Krishna book that the devotee always wins. The devotee always defeats Krishna. When Mother Yashoda was trying to bind Lord Krishna, eventually she was successful. And there it said that the devotees, Krishna is known as the Britya Vatsyata. He is conquered by his devotees. He always lets the devotee win. Because of the endeavor, parishramam, because of the endeavor of the devotees, Krishna becomes completely mesmerized by the devotees' endeavor. And he becomes completely indebted. He can't believe that somebody would do so much for him without any kind of recourse for fruit of activity, without any requirement for a reward, just unconditionally offering this service, like Sandipani Muni, like Sudama and Krishna for Sandipani Muni. So he said, let all of your endeavors become fulfilled. Whatever you desire, let that happen. Let that manifest. Satya Santo Manorataha. Whatever comes into your mind, let it happen. Let it be. You have that. Astu. Take that as a blessing, as a benediction for pleasing the spiritual master. And then he says, Chandamsi Yakti Yamani. Let all the mantras that we have learnt in the ashram, let them be ever fresh. Ayata Yamani. Yata Yama means food that has been cooked 3 hours before. In Ayurveda, it says Yata Yama food is tasteless. The taste is gone after 3 hours of cooking. So Ayata Yamani means that the taste will be there forever. Let there be a taste for this Vedic instructions, for the sound vibration of the mantras, the chanda. Chandamsi Yatsi Yamani. Let that be ever fresh. Don't become stale. Otherwise, if it becomes stale, we'll leave Krishna consciousness. But Parikshit Maharaj has pointed out in the beginning of this chapter, in the Sudama Vipra chapter, that those who have heard Srimad Bhagavatam, who will hear Srutva Sakrad, who are intensely attached to hearing Bhagavatam, they understand the essence of life. They'll continue to understand the essence of life. And they'll be continue to remain disgusted with material enjoyment, what the material energy has to offer in comparison with what Krishna has to offer, in comparison with Krishna consciousness, a life in Krishna consciousness. It's incomparable. So let that be ever tasteful. Param drishtva. That's a blessing that we want to receive from our authorities, from our spiritual master, that we have param drishtva, that we always taste Krishna consciousness, the vibration of the mantras, Chandamsi Yatayamani, that it never becomes stale, that the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra remains invigorating, as enlightening, as inspiring, and as encouraging as it did the first time we got a taste for chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Let that continue to remain, that taste. Let me continue to get that taste. This is the blessing that was received by Sudama Vipra, an empowerment. And then we know that Sudama Vipra, he returns home. He goes to see Krishna is remembering this. This is part of the first Kuli reunion, Kuli Mela. This is the first. Some people think the first Kuli Mela was in Los Angeles, but actually the first Kuli Mela was in Dwarka, when Sudama went to see Krishna. That was the first reunion Kuli Mela, big Kuli Mela. Of course, there was only a few people there, but Rukmini and Krishna. But their recollections of the time together. This is what people do when we get together. We remember what we did together, service that we did together, that binds us together in a very strong relationship between friends and between seniors and juniors. In this way, through this recollection, we develop a whole culture of interactions and a culture of relationship and a culture of personalism. Krishna is a person. So he remembers this, and he remembers the endeavor, and he remembers the blessings, and he remembers Sudama. He never forgot Sudama. Krishna's in the heart of all living entities. He understood what Sudama was going through. He understood why Sudama was so skinny, why his bones were sticking out of his skin, why his veins were poking out of his skin, why he had such a disheveled look, why his dhoti was so, his lungi, his loincloth was so dirty and looking so unkept. He understood that because he's in the heart of the living entity, that Sudama was in bliss. Sudama looking like this, he entered through all the forts of Dwarka, all the gates. He entered through, usually nobody could go there, high security. You know, high security in Dwarka, but Sudama, because of his effulgence and his empowerment, everybody could understand that this person has a right to go anywhere. He's a Brahmana. Savagata. He can go anywhere he likes. He has an admit anywhere badge. He can do anything he likes in Dwarka. So he went straight to Krishna's palace. And Krishna could see him coming from a distance. And immediately he got up from his bed and received him as a Brahmana and embraced him and offered him foot bath and offered him prayers and offered him glorification and offered him sweets and offered him aarti, offered him various types of lamps and different types of incense and different types of offerings. Many upachats. Krishna and Rukmini and the maidservants were so surprised to see the reception that Krishna gave to Sudama Vipra. They were mind-boggled. But Rukmini was thinking, my lord, he never gets anything wrong. This person must be an exalted person. So she took up the chamra and started fanning Sudama. While Krishna was bathing and glorifying him, Rukmini was joining in the service. And all the while, Krishna knew why Sudama was there. And Sudama was so embarrassed when he saw Krishna and he was recollecting their old times. That was enough for him. The darshan was enough. The association was enough. He couldn't bring himself to say, look, Krishna, I'm not doing too well. We haven't got anything. We haven't got a nice house. We haven't got a nice facility. Can you lend us a few dollars? He couldn't think of asking Krishna for anything. So he didn't say anything. He hung his head low in front of Krishna, looking at his feet. And Krishna said, Sudama, you know, why did you come here? Out of the blue, haven't seen you for such a long time. Tell me why you came here. And he couldn't say anything. He said, Sudama, what are you carrying? What have you got in your sack? What have you got carrying over your shoulder? And Sudama said, I didn't bring anything. I couldn't bring anything for you, my lord. And Krishna's saying, I know you would never come empty-handed. Just give me what you brought. He said, no, I didn't bring anything. So Krishna forcefully took this flat rice, chipped rice from Sudama. And it was hard, coarse meal. And it was begged because Sudama has nothing. And Krishna took one morsel and he was completely satisfied. And he wanted to take the whole offering. And Sudama was so embarrassed and feeling so lowly and wretched that Krishna was eating this. And Rukmini was stopping Krishna from eating this food. She was thinking, how could he eat this coarse meal food? It must be ripping up his intestines. Must be wrecking his stomach. Krishna eats the most opulent foodstuffs in Dwarka. He's a king. He eats the Rajabhog. Krishna eats the best food. He's eating food with ghee and sweets and puris and all sorts of opulent milks. He can't eat this food, so she stopped him from eating that food. But Krishna was, when he took the food, he was thinking, how can I repay Sudama? Impossible. Now Sudama has indebted me. I can't repay him. It's impossible. He's given me so much love, so much affection, that I can't give him anything for that in return. I can't give him the wife of Lord Indra. I can't give him the opulence of Lord Brahma, all the demigods together. They can't equal one iota of what I received from Sudama just now. One little grain of rice. I can't possibly. And there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a very interesting verse here is provided for us. A verse that we all know from Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavatam, there's a few verses from the Gita. One of them is this verse, Pataram Pushpam Palam Toyam, Yome Bhakta Prayachchati. That this verse is quoted here, that Krishna will take anything that a devotee offers, Uparitam. If a devotee gives something to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna will take that and become obliged to the devotee. Krishna is the Britya Vatsyata. He becomes completely obliged by the devotee because he gave him love, not because he gave him the rice or the big Raj Bhog offering. Because of the affection and the consciousness of the offering, that Krishna takes it. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that this pushpam means that even if you offer Krishna a flower, flowers are used for smelling and decorating. But even if you offer Krishna a flower with love, he will eat the flower. He'll even eat the flower because the devotees offered that with so much love and affection. And so Sudama left the place and is thinking that I can't ask Krishna anything. He's already put me in a very uncomfortable situation. And he left to go home and he's thinking his wife won't mind. His wife's very chaste and very devoted. So when he returned home, Sudama was the same Sudama. He was in his loincloth. His collarbones are still sticking out of his skin. He's still skinny, Brahmana, poor Brahmana. And he's going back home. But he's effulgent because he's seen Krishna, his association with Krishna. And when he got home, he saw this whole transformation outside near where he lived. And he was thinking, what is this? Who are these people? Where did all this come from? He's asking himself. Then some of the maids, the servants from the house started to approach him and say, yes, you know, this is your house, my lord. And he was thinking, this couldn't be my house. And then his wife heard that he was here. So his wife came out and his wife was already transformed into a beautiful heavenly damsel. And she came out of the house. Sudama doesn't know who she is. Never seen her before. Sudama's looking, continued to walk. But his wife knows Sudama because Sudama still looks like the same Sudama. Said that otherwise when he left the palace in Dwarka, Krishna could have blessed him and given him a strong body and all opulence is there. But he kept him in that same condition so that when he went home, his wife would recognize him. She would know that that's her husband. And then she would go out and greet him and bring him into the palace. And the point here is that because of the empowerment of Sandipani Muni and because of the blessings that he received from the spiritual master and the association of Krishna, Sudama Vipra was given incredible opulence and amazing facility that is beyond imagination, from this little hut to this incredible palace with unlimited facility for enjoyment. And there, immediately, it said in the morning time when Sudama's wife woke up and she was surrounded by opulence and her body was completely reconstructed and her maidservants and her bedstead and everything was a completely different form, she immediately thought, she didn't think, wow, this is fantastic and it's time to really enjoy. She thought, yes, Sudama has met Krishna and this is Krishna's blessing on us. Immediately she thought like that. And because it was Krishna, it was connected with Krishna, then full utilization for using it in Krishna consciousness. And that's a verse that's quoted in this connection in this chapter, that we connect everything with Krishna, yukta vairagya muchyate, and it becomes Krishna consciousness. So Sudama Vipra was also transformed. And it said that Sudama Vipra, he was extremely renounced, he was extremely knowledgeable, he was extremely dear to Krishna, but he had one relic of attachment to the material world. And this was to finally cleanse him of that, to dissolve all attachments to the material world. And his attachment was, he was attached to being renounced. He was thinking that he had nothing and it was good, you know, that he was, well, not always thinking like that, but he had that skerrick of attachment that I don't need anything. I'm completely connected with Krishna. So Krishna gave him everything and said, you can have everything and still be Krishna conscious and be connected with me. So that's a very wonderful meditation of the process of empowerment, example of empowerment from the Krishna book. And I wanted to quickly just recollect some examples of contemporary empowerment that are the Walking Day Bhagavats from our association that we have here in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I was thinking of many different personalities that are highly empowered preachers in our movement, and you know the list yourself from the Indradyumna Maharajas and Bibi Govinda Maharaj and Sri Prahlad Prabhu, who was just here this morning. Many, many wonderful examples of incredible empowerment of devotees that Srila Prabhupada and Parampara empowerment. But here in the last few mornings in the Mangalati, you've been reading out the scores for the book scores. And every morning, we've been here for three or four mornings, Every morning it's like 1,800 Bhagavad Gitas distributed or something like that. Is it? How many Gitas you distribute in one day? How many? A lot. Nearly 2,000, you can say. Nearly 2,000 Gitas in one day. Bhagavad Gitas. So that's empowerment. How could... Imagine that some of the biggest bookshop in Delhi, they're not selling 2,000 books a day. No way. If they were selling 2,000 books a day, they'd be very happy. That's why we're so happy. We're selling 2,000 books a day, but we're not just selling any book. We're selling 2,000 Bhagavad Gitas a day. It's incredible. That's empowerment. And there's a bookstore here and a bookstore there and a bookstore everywhere. You can see there's a bookstore. People selling Srila Prabhupada's books and competing in a way like Maharaj Priyavrata. He wasn't competing with the sun to say, I'm better than you. I'm a better sun maker than you. You think you're such a good sun, I can make a better sun than you. Prabhupada says, no, Vaishnavas don't compete like this. Vaishnavas, with their empowerment, they encourage each other to serve Krishna. And so with this empowerment that we get, and not, you know, every individual who's distributing these books must understand that the inspiration is coming from Shishi Radha Shamsunda, Shishi Krishna Balaram, and Gornitai, and Parampara. That's encouraging them, inspiring them to inspire others to take to Krishna consciousness. It's not because of my expertise or my fancy lines or whatever it is, because of, you know, my training that I'm so good, or because of my looks, people come up to me and I sell 200 books. But it's because of Krishna in the heart of the other living entity. Krishna's in the heart of all living entities, and he's inspiring them to come and take a book. And we're standing here as instruments in Krishna's mission. And when we start to think that we're it and not the instrument, that we're the medium, then we become bewildered and we lose empowerment. Empowerment comes from understanding that we're an instrument in Krishna's service, and we're not the doer. And the last thing I wanted to say was in connection with more with the Raj Lila, because we were in Dwarka for a while, but I wanted to bring the presentation today here in Braj, in Vrindavan Dham, to meditate on two personalities who were powerful personalities who were cursed by Narad Muni. And they were cursed because of misuse of their power. When we have a power, we misuse the power, we lose the power. It's part of the cosmic kind of karmic chain of reaction. So Manigriva and Nalukuvera, they were cursed to take birth here in the Dham as Arjuna trees, twin Arjuna trees. And Krishna, out of his mischievous nature, he was left tied to the wooden grinding mortar in the middle of the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. But the sun was pouring down, steaming down in the middle of the courtyard. And he was thinking, I'll go for some shade in the middle of these two trees. And he crawled over to the tree, bringing the wooden grinding mortar with him. And he very expertly went between the two trees, and effortlessly he placed the mortar between two huge trees and gave a slight nudge, slight pull. He didn't extend any kind of effort. Krishna effortlessly performs his lila, his pastime in the Dham. Even his killing lila is very effortlessly. He placed the wooden grinding mortar between the two trees and gave a nudge, and the trees came down, and through the trees, within the middle of the trees, we know this resplendent, effulgent demigod bodies came out, Manigriva and Nalukuvera. And they offered a series of prayers, Nama Atma Pradipaya, that Krishna, you're enlightening the hearts of all living entities, you're an amazing personality, and many, many things, that you're the Yogeshwara, you're the supreme master of mystics, and you're the Vishveshvatma, you're the soul of the universe, the personality of the universe, etc., etc. They made many prayers. But then they summed up their prayers with this very beautiful understanding, and they're offering this prayer to Krishna to say to Damodar, his little Krishna is bound around the waist still with the rope of Mother Yashoda. The triumphant rope of Mother Yashoda is binding Lord Krishna. He's a little boy, and they're big demigods who are freed from their entanglement, and they're praying for liberation from this person who's bound, little baby who's bound. They're praying for liberation. And they're praying that they will get this technology, this technique of Krishna consciousness to overcome birth, death, disease, and old age. That they're praying that they can come remain connected with this. Vane gunanu katane shavano katayam. That from now, from this day forward, they're saying this in the jewel case, that both of us, Manigriva and Nadakavera, from this day forward, let all of our speech be glorification of Krishna, of you, Damodar. Vane gunanu katano katayam. That let our hands, kado kamasu, manasatavapadayo, no. Let my hands be used for serving Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Let whatever I do with these hands be an offering, an arpanam to the Lord. And let my mind, manasa paratavayo no, let my mind be placed at your lotus feet so that we never budge one inch from understanding and recollection and connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And smrityam shiras tava nivasa jagat praname, let me offer obeisances to all of the living entities in the universe. Let my head remember to offer dandabats to all living entities in the universe, because Krishna is in the heart of all living entities. And when I offer obeisances to the jivas, I'm offering obeisances to Krishna, and I'm remembering Krishna. And finally, drishte satam dashanestu tanu banu pavanam. Let me see the devotees of the Lord, because when I see the devotees of the Lord, I remember Krishna. When I see the Vaishnavas, I automatically remember Krishna, and I'm in Krishna consciousness. This is a technology that the Manigriva Nalakavera, the technique that they're praying to Krishna, to please give me this process of Krishna consciousness so that I remain fixed in service at your lotus feet, and that I overcome my attachment to this false illusion of the material body, nashto moham, smriti labdva, that I remember who I am and I overcome my illusion, and that I understand that I got this from you, tvat prashadat, mayachuta, that this is Krishna's mercy. So we finish with this meditation here in the Dham and ask if there are any questions or comments.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much. Very, very beautiful class. Very, very nice. So I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about the empowerment, individual empowerment of devotees from the new devotee to the GBC. Mm. And it's very, very inspiring. And I wanted to hear if you can develop something about this understanding that everything we do is because of Krishna's empowerment in devotional service, like that. If you have something to say more about that.
Okay. Sure. Oftentimes we heard Srila Prabhupada glorify little Sarasvati for her services that she performed. And one time Srila Prabhupada was recollecting that here in Vrindavan, Sarasvati was doing aati. She was a four-year-old. She was doing aati ceremony to the deities, her deities. And she would bring the aati to Prabhupada. She would bring the lamp to Prabhupada. After she offered, she'd give Prabhupada the lamp. And Prabhupada would take the lamp from Sarasvati. And then after the puja, Sarasvati would give the flowers to Prabhupada that she'd offered, bring the flowers over to Prabhupada and offer them. And Prabhupada was saying, like this, the Krishna consciousness is dormant in the heart of the living entity. Everybody has this capacity to engage in service to Krishna. And age is no impediment. Oftentimes age can be a blessing, that the young children can very spontaneously offer bhakti, can very spontaneously engage in the process, a powerful process of devotion, without any inhibition. just completely offer everything to Krishna because they don't know anything else. When they come and clap before the deity, they're doing devotional service, they're very much pleasing to Krishna. And Prabhupada said that you just teach them like this. Whatever you do, they will do, they will imitate. So whatever we do as older devotees or more experienced devotees, younger devotees will imitate and do the same thing. That's a process of parampara. It's a process of teaching. It's a principle of teaching. We learn by association and by example and by imitation. Imitation of a good thing. So when we chant Hare Krishna, the potency of the holy name is there for everybody who connects with the holy name. Everybody can benefit from that. And that is the most powerful form of empowerment, to connect with the holy name. And a child who chants the holy name, and an old person who chants the holy name, and anyone in between, from any race, from any background, from any condition, said that wherever you come from, if you can connect with the holy name, your life becomes transformed. And that transformation is empowerment. We leave behind our previous mundane associations for spiritual engagement and activity. And therefore, we can say that the word that empowerment is something that happens from day one in Krishna consciousness, because we have to become empowered to leave behind our misconceptions. We require empowerment, we require inspiration and some form of acknowledgement and encouragement from within and from without. So we get that from within, we get from the super soul. We may not be connected with that, but the super soul is giving us encouragement and direction and directing the wanderings of living entities, directing us to who we need and what we need to do to maintain our with the process. And from without, we are receiving so many wonderful opportunities and potential to develop our Krishna consciousness and our taste for Krishna. And all the while requires empowerment. Prabhupada prayed to the deities to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, that he wouldn't fall down. He prayed to the deities, as if Prabhupada is an eternal servant of the Lord, but he's showing us that we have to, for everything we do, we require the empowerment of the deity. We require the empowerment of Krishna. So we pray that, please Krishna, please Guru Maharaj, please Vaishnavas, give me the intelligence to remain fixed in devotional service, that I may not deviate from this process of Krishna consciousness, and that I understand that I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. So for a simple thing, please Krishna, give me the intelligence, give me the ability to remain in Krishna consciousness, to develop a taste. Give me a taste for the holy name. So namsiyata yamani, never let me lose the taste for Krishna, for the holy name. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Prabhupada said it's a very easy thing. He said that in the Bhagavad was glorified, Savai Bhagavato Raja, he was glorified as being a great king, but he was a great devotee. He was a Raja Rishi. Savai Bhagavato Raja. And it says that Pandaveo Maharata Bala Kridana Kai Kridan Krishna Kridan Cha Adade. He became a great devotee simply, Prabhupada said, by playing Krishna Krida. So by playing he became a devotee. It's so potent, the process of Krishna consciousness. Just by connecting with it, we become empowered. At any level, empowerment is there. And it's the empowerment becomes blocked for two reasons. One is Vaishnava Aparad, that blocks the flow of empowerment. And the other is Seva Aparad. So the acharyas are encouraging us and warning us to avoid these blockages to empowerment, and to maintain or to open the floodgates of empowerment by careful association and interaction with the Vaishnavas and glorification of the Vaishnavas, glorifying the devotees and glorifying their achievements, and becoming free from envy of other living entities and lust and greed, because they're impediments to our bhakti. I think we should finish here. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Shri Prabhupada ki Gopimanandi.